Okay, at long last, we're going to conclude the study that we've been looking at on preparing your kids for the real world after, I think this is the 13th Sunday, and this sermon is not going to have as much scripture in it as some of the other ones did because it's more practical things and some observations that I've had learning from other people and just things that I've picked up along the way. So we're going to finish up with intellectual development, and then once we do that, we're going to look into social development, and then finally we're going to conclude with when it's time to kick your kids out of the house and take them to the edge of the nest and make them spread their wings and give them the boot. So first of all, if you have an outline, we are down on page 35 and down on point number 6. And I want to talk about the importance of establishing a daily routine for your kids. And this is something that I've witnessed with other families that I've known over the years and seen the benefit of this, of having your kids on some kind of a structured routine. And this will foster an environment of where you can foster intellectual development. It's very valuable for the kids. It provides consistency, safety, and security. It just lets them know that they know whenever in their house that there's just certain things that are going to be a certain way. And we go to bed at a certain time. We get up at a certain time. We have dinner at lunch at a certain time. We have school time at a certain time. And so they know what to expect, and they're not in a constant state of chaos or of not knowing what's going to happen from day to day. This will make for an orderly, a predictable life and not one of chaos. And the next thing that I think is important when it comes to intellectual development, I mentioned this last time, is to teach your kids how to read. This will open up the world to your children. Once they know how to read, then they can learn anything. They can teach themselves anything. There's probably a reason why for years during the Dark Ages where the Catholic Church wanted to keep people in darkness, and they didn't want people to know how to read. They didn't want they resisted the printing press, right? Because they didn't want books out there. Because when there's books and people know how to read, then they can learn things for themselves, and they don't have to go to the priest or they don't have to go to the authority figure to get the information. They can learn it on their own. Most importantly, reading will allow them to be able to read and understand the Word of God, which we talked about here a few weeks ago, and how important that is. Reading will enable them to learn anything they want. And reading to your children when they're young and even after they know how to read is beneficial too. And this is something that I didn't come up with on my own, but a friend of mine was telling me that they thought this was important, that even after your kids can read, to read to them. And if you think about it, this could be beneficial to them as well, because it helps them to learn auditorily. It helps them to learn by listening and by hearing. It also teaches them, if you read them quality literature, they'll learn from just hearing it, but then they also, this is a family bonding time, which can be a good thing, and they can also learn, it fosters the child's imagination and their grasp of language, because they get to learn, they get to hear your intonation and your inflection as you read, and they then learn how to read themselves, because there's more to reading than just simply pronouncing the words on the page, so that can be beneficial as well. I would say teach them the value of reading, learning, and social interaction over the antisocial and intellectually destructive habits such as the following: smartphone addiction, texting, so-called social networking, which is anything but social, playing video games and watching TV. These things I would say that you ought to wage a relentless war on in your own family, because these things are socially and intellectually destructive, and the younger the children, the more destructive they are. And I've talked about those things in the series that I did on the digital invasion about 4 years ago, I think it was. So I won't recover that information now. Another thing you want to teach, and I think this is important when it comes to intellectual development, is teaching your kids how to manage money. And I'm not going to go into this extensively either, because I've also done the sermon on money management here a couple of years ago. But I think it's important to, and like some of these things, when I say I think, I'm giving you my opinion, right? If I give you a verse, I'm not saying I think, I'm telling you what the Bible says. But I think it's important to not give your kids an allowance, right? When I grew up, I was given an allowance. And to give them an allowance just teaches them an entitlement mindset. It teaches them that you don't have to work for money, that money's just handed to you just because you exist. And do you wonder why we have such a welfare culture these days, and why we have people that think they're entitled to everything, right? I'd say my generation and the generation younger than me is the most entitled generation out there. Well, them and the baby boomers, I suppose, because Bud would always tell us that he thought that his generation, the people that are in their 70s, were some of the worst, because you start talking to them about taking away the Social Security benefits or something, and they are up in arms. That is an entitlement. You know, that is, I deserve that. So does that all harken back to getting allowances when you're kids? I don't know, but it certainly, it can't help matters. So when you give them an allowance, the kids grow up expecting someone to just give them money whenever they want it. And this gives them no concept of earning money and the value of it, right? Because when kids are little, they have no concept of money, right? I foolishly gave my niece one time, I think it was a $20 bill for her birthday. And she was wee little, and it was too much money anyway. But anyway, I gave it to her, and she's like, oh, I got a dollar. She didn't know what it, she, if I would have given her a $21 bill, she would have been elated, because she doesn't know the difference between a $20 bill and a $1 bill, right? So if she got 20 of them, I remember one time one of your kids' birthday parties, I think I gave them $21 bills or something, and they were just super excited about it. Like, and that was clearly not the nicest gift they got. Obviously, they got a lot of stuff that was a lot nicer than that, but they were so excited because they got 20 bills, and it was, you know, when they're little, that's impressive to them. But anyway, they don't have a concept of money, earning money. So when the allowance is just given to them, they're not going to learn the value of a dollar. I would say that their allowance is getting to live in your house and getting to eat your food. That's their allowance, right? You're providing their basic needs. So here's what I would suggest. Offer to pay them for the extra work that they do around the house, which is in addition to their chores. So I wouldn't pay them for doing dishes or doing laundry or vacuuming the floors or something like that, cleaning up their rooms. But you pay them for work that's additional to that, maybe raking the leaves out in the yard or doing some project around the house or something like that. And then this starts to teach them the idea that you work and you get paid and you have to do a sufficient job and you have to, you know, meet the expectations of the person that's paying you before you get paid. And you want to emphasize the importance of a job, doing a job well done, and not pay them until it's satisfactory. I was down in Cincinnati at Eric and Jill's place, and this is when my annual car cleaning, and I have Noah vacuum out my car and wipe it all down, everything on the inside. And I sent him back out there about 3 or 4 times. Like, nope, there's a spot missing. You missed there. You missed there. I made him do it right before he got paid. And that's a good lesson for him. I don't know what I'd do if I didn't have Noah. My car would look like a mess. I mean, you can imagine. It only gets cleaned once a year. You can imagine what it would look like if it was 5 years or so. So you want to supply for your kids' needs, like their food and clothing, and give them gifts occasionally on special occasions. But other than that, I would say when they want something, you make them work for it, earn the money, and buy it themselves. Because, well, isn't the title of the sermon preparing your kids for the real world? What do you do in the real world? You work, you make money, and you buy things that you want, right? So you start teaching your kids that when they're little. Teach them how to work, save money, and then buy things. Now, when they make money or when they're given money as a gift, then I would teach them how to manage it. And this is, once again, my recommendation, okay? This is not a law. But I would recommend teaching them to, first of all, give 10% to the Lord, then give 10% to their savings for their future. So you pay God first, you pay yourself second, and then, depending on how old they are, saving for a car or college for boys or a house or so on. And I would also teach them how to create a budget, which means, of course, that you have to create one yourself. So I don't think most people these days know what a budget even is, but that's something that would be necessary to do to teach your kids when they're older. You're not going to teach a 4-year-old kid about a budget, probably, but once they get to be teenagers, definitely. I mean, I would say you have done a disservice to your children if you have not taught them how to manage money by the time they're in their teenage years. You are setting them up for major failure in life. Here's another example. If they want a smartphone and you deem that they're old enough to have one, and your age may be different than what my age is, where I would deem that they need to have one, but whatever that age is, if you think they're old enough for it, here's the rule of thumb. Make them save up the money for the retail price of the thing. They want an iPhone 8 or something. Okay, you save up the $600-$700 for it. You buy the thing with cash, and then you pay the monthly fee for it yourself. And if the child's not old enough to do that, if they don't have a job that makes enough money to do that, well, then I'd say they're not old enough to have an iPhone or a smartphone. So that's just another example of how to teach a kid's financial responsibility. If they want a car, make them save up and buy it themselves. Let them use yours until they can do that. You know, but I wouldn't recommend giving them a car or giving them a phone or giving them much of anything. Make them learn to make their own way in this world. Next, the topic of college. I would say to teach your boys to think outside the box when it comes to acquiring, especially post-secondary education. This is 2008. This is not 1992. Things are a lot different than, well, even probably when most of you were graduating high school, even when I was graduating high school in the year 2000. Things are a lot different now. Back when I was graduating, you went and you could get a degree, and then you probably could get a decent job in those days. Today, very different story. Back in the 90s, for goodness sakes, if you had a college degree and you could fog a mirror, you know, just put in an application, within a week get a job. But that's not the way it is anymore. The days of getting a bachelor's degree in anything, just sending out resumes and sitting by the phone for a company to hire you, are over. I mean, those days are over. I don't know if they're ever coming back, but they're certainly not coming back anytime soon. This booming economy that we supposedly have is nothing but a facade. We supposedly have this great economy, right? And you have record number of, I'll call them kids, in their 20s and 30s living at home, which I'm going to talk about in just a minute. The economy is quite different than it used to be. I would say the bachelor's degrees are pretty well worthless today. There are a few of them that are worth something. Engineering degrees, medical degrees, things like that. Technology degrees, IT, stuff, you know, that you actually need that education to get the job for. But most bachelor's degrees, I would say, are worthless today. If you go to most any place, you go to the coffee shop, go to a pizza place, go to a fast food joint, most of those people that are waiting on you have bachelor's degrees. You know, a lot of them do. They're obviously not using their bachelor's degree for anything that they went to school for. I saw a video, Peter Schiff did a video, he was down in New Orleans at Mardi Gras, and he was going around interviewing people, all the bartenders, all the cab drivers, everybody had at least a bachelor's degree, if not a master's degree. I thought, what a waste. They've got tens of thousands of dollars of debt working as a bartender, which they could have got that job without the degree, and now they're going to be working to pay that thing off for the rest of their lives. But I'd say it's even worse than that. Bachelor's degrees, actually, to say that they're worthless is probably an inaccurate statement. They are worse than worthless. They are worth less than worthless because you have to pay $40,000 and go into debt $40,000 to get something that's worthless. So to get something that's worth nothing and then to pay $40,000 for it, that to me says it's even worse than worthless. Now, you may not agree with me, but that is my opinion. Now, you can remember this quote. I wish I could say that I made it up, but I didn't. I heard it from a guy named Adam Kokesh, but it's never too late to drop out of college. Okay? Remember, it's never too late to drop out of college. Most people say, what do they say? It's never too late to go back to college, right? That's the saying. This guy was being interviewed, and they said, are you still going for your master's degree? And he said, no, he's like, I quit. He's like, it's never too late to drop out of college. And I thought, that's genius. I love it. But anyway, for most people in most majors, it's not too late to drop out. You know, the sooner the better, because you're just going to rack up more and more debt and get no job when you get out anyway. My opinion. So if you don't like it, you don't have to take it. I would say teach your kids to be entrepreneurs. Most people don't think like this, right? I didn't used to think like this. My thinking has changed just over the last probably 4 or 5 years on this topic. And I am much more entrepreneurially minded than I ever was before. The idea of starting your own business or doing your own thing never really appealed to me before. But this will teach your kids some things. It'll teach them the value of money and of hard work, first of all. It'll teach them how to satisfy customer wants and provide a good or a service at a competitive price. That's a valuable thing for society, for your kids to learn. I would encourage them to start their own kid businesses when they're young. And I got a whole list of them here of examples of things that your kids can do from the time that they're probably, well, even under teenagers, maybe 8, 10 years old and up. How about lawn mowing? That's a classic kid hustle. Dog walking. There's a website out there, I forget the name of it, but it's a it's like the Uber of dog walking, where you can sign up and people that need their dogs walk can sign up and and you get matched up and you can go. You can make a lot of money doing dog walking. Plant watering, watering people's plants when they're not home. Babysitting, of course. Music coaching, if you're musically talented. You can. There are lots of parents out there that would pay you to come and sit with their kids while they play the piano and just kind of be there for them, just to encourage them, not to be a teacher so much, but just to encourage them, to help them get motivated to do it. Lego Club, I'd never heard of this until I heard it on a podcast, but you can invite kids over to your house and you can have a Lego Club building time for a few hours, where it's sort of like a babysitting service, but they're playing with Legos at the same time. And lots of parents would pay to have their kids come over for a few hours to have a break where their kids could go do something constructive. If your kids are, I almost said autistic, artistic, face painting. You know, that's something that they could do. Baked goods. Of course, your girls could do that, baking cookies and pies and things like that. And there's all kinds of ways that you can get in and start selling them to local businesses, and all kinds of good ideas there. Knitting and sewing handmade products. Kids can do that from home. Lemonade stands, raking leaves, shoveling snow. How about this one? Vending machines. Not the expensive ones, but the gumball machines, the M&M machines. You can buy those things for less than $200. And then all you have to do is just find a place to put it where there's a lot of foot traffic. And you split some of the earnings with the establishment where you put it. And all you got to do is just go back every month or so and fill the thing up. It's residual income. You can do all right doing that. Kids could do that. Great kid business. I would recommend, if you're interested in this kind of thing, to check out the Junior Moneymakers podcast. It's at juniormoneymakers.com. I think I'm probably the only man that does not have children that listens to that show, but I've listened to every single episode of it, and I would recommend that parents with children listen to it as well. You could learn a lot of good ideas on how your kids could learn to start their own businesses and really get a leg up in this world and be way better off than their peers. By the time they graduate high school, they're already going to have their own money. They're going to have their own business while their friends are getting ready to embark on a four-year mission to nowhere. So I would definitely recommend that. I would teach your kids to volunteer or train under a professional in the field that they're interested in. This is just called old-fashioned apprenticeship. This is just what you call apprenticeship. Basically, this is what people used to do all the time. Young people would get basically tag along with a professional in a field. A lot of times it was his own father or something. And they would learn that trade from that person, and then they would be able to go out and do it themselves. And this would be probably looked down upon today because, of course, you know, if you're smart and respectable, you go to college. But, wow, spend a few months training under a skilled person, an electrician or a plumber or a programmer or anything. And I mean, you name the industry, just tag along with somebody, do it for free. And if it was my kids, I would say, okay, I'll take care of your room and board at home while you do this, work for free. And you could learn a lot and end up getting a leg up. You can also search out cost-effective, non-traditional educational programs. There are cheap schools online where you can learn to program. There's this thing out there, it's called the internet. Anybody ever heard of it? The internet. You can learn anything you want to learn. And there is so many opportunities out there on the internet where you can learn, where you don't have to go to these brick-and-mortar schools and waste $40,000 or $100,000 learning nonsense that's not going to benefit you in life anyway. One such place is called Code School. It's a program that costs $29 a month. That's a little bit less than Harvard last time I checked. $29 a month, codeschool.com, and no, I'm not an affiliate, so I'm not selling you anything here. You can go and learn to be a computer programmer for $29 per month. That's a lot better deal than a lot of schools out there. And that's just one of many programs. Skillshare is an online learning platform. It offers thousands of courses and all kinds of stuff. $15 a month, $99 per year. Skillshare.com, you can check that out. I went and joined it at least temporarily to check it out, and there's all kinds of things that you can learn there about virtually anything. And even if you're an adult and you just want adult enrichment, you can learn pretty much, you think of something you want to know how to do, you can go on there and learn how to do it. And if you're interested, I can get you 2 months for free through, and it's not my affiliate link, I'm not selling it to you, but through another person's affiliate link, I can get you 2 months for, I think, 99 cents if you're interested in that. And here's, I think, the best deal of all. And like I said, my opinion. Skip college and do 1 year in Praxis, interning with a startup company. There's this company out there, it's called Praxis. Their website is discoverpraxis.com. I heard about this a few years ago. If this isn't the best deal ever, I don't know what is. So they partner with local small businesses, startup companies, in cities all across the country, and they're going globally as well. And so they want to find companies that have, I think it's like 50 employees or something around there. So when you went to work for a company like that, you would learn all about business because it's a small enough company that you're going to see how sales work and how purchasing works and how engineering works and how R&D works and all of those different things. So you're going to learn a whole bunch of different aspects. And it is an apprentice program on steroids, basically. There's a six-month pre-apprenticeship boot camp that you go through, and then you have a six-month paid apprenticeship at a startup company. Now, you will make more during this year-long internship being paid there than you pay for it, okay? Tell me if this isn't the best deal ever. So you pay $11,000 for the year of this program, and you make $14,000 at the company you're working for. So you are paid to go to school. You make more than you spend to go to it. Now, at the end of the internship, you are guaranteed a job making at least $40,000 per year, and the average salary is $50,000 per year. Guaranteed. You tell me a college out there that says, hey, you know what, we're going to pay you $3,000 to come here for a year, and then we're going to guarantee you get a $40,000 to $50,000 a year job after we pay you $3,000 to come and take our course. You tell me another opportunity like that. They have a 98% success rate at placing graduates. Not too shabby, huh? It is discoverpraxis.com. I've recommended this to numerous people. I've actually got a couple of young men that are looking into it and actively pursuing it right now that have talked to the people at Praxis. The thing is, they don't take just anybody. They have a 98% placement rate for a reason, because they only take good students. But you can go there right out of high school, or you can go there right out of college. It doesn't matter. I don't know what there's probably some upper age limit, but yeah, 18 years old, spend 1 year, have it all, you know, make more money than you put into it, and then have a job for $40,000 to $50,000 a year when you graduate a year later. It's incredible. So anyway, I would highly recommend you check that out if you are interested. And let me just have some concluding remarks on the intellectual development section here. I want to finally get to the Bible a little bit. I hate, this is not like me to not give you at least 40 or 50 verses in a sermon, but there are limits to what can be accomplished by education, because in today's world, I think that education is the sacred cow, right? I mean, what I've just said here is rank heresy, right? Telling kids not to go to college, I mean, that would be just like the worst thing. It'd be like I told them to go out there and jump in front of a train or something. Like, this is rank heresy. How could you dare speak against the educational establishment of this fine country? But there are limits to what can be accomplished by education. No matter how qualified the teacher, no matter how correct the method, no matter how good the curriculum, a stubborn fool will not learn. It doesn't matter what you do. Now look at Proverbs 1 and verse 7. Proverbs 1 and verse 7. So this is something to be aware of. If you homeschool, or if you send your kids to a traditional school, sometimes, no matter what you try, you might not be able to be successful, because after all, your child does have a will of his own, and you can try to mold that and change that, but sometimes some people are just going to dig in their heels and they're not going to learn no matter what you do. Proverbs 1 and verse 7 says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction." There are some people out there that actually just hate learning anything. They hate being taught by anybody. They hate being told that they're wrong about something, and they are not going to hear no matter what you say. Let's look at Proverbs 17 and verse 16. Proverbs 17 and verse 16. I have a note in my Bible next to this verse that says, "Sending most kids to college." Now let me read the verse. "Wherefore is there a price in the hand of a fool to get wisdom, seeing he hath no heart to it?" All of you who have been to college, as I was, know that how many students that were there with us fit this description to a T. Their parents put a price in their hand to go get wisdom, and they had no heart to it. They didn't care. They didn't do anything. They skipped class. They didn't study. They didn't have a heart to it. It was a fool's errand to send those kids on to school. Look at Proverbs 27 and verse 22. Proverbs 27 and verse 22. It says, though thou shouldest bray a mortar, to bray means to beat small, to bruise, pound, crush to powder. Though thou shouldest bray a fool in a mortar among wheat with a pestle, yet will not his foolishness depart from him. Just some people that are just dead set on being stupid, and it doesn't matter what you try to do to help them out of it, they're going to remain in that state. Let me give you one more. Jeremiah 17 and verse 23. There is a remedy to this that can work, which I'll give you in just a second. Jeremiah 17 and verse 23. It says, but they obeyed not, neither inclined their ear, talking about Israel, but made their necks stiff, that they might not hear nor receive instruction. Sometimes God's own children won't hear, won't receive instruction. They don't want to hear it, and God's the best teacher of all. Right here's the best book in the world, and sometimes they just won't hear. So you know what you do as parents? Well, you got to beat that foolishness out of them early on in life. Look at Proverbs 22 and verse 15. There is hope if you start young. If you wait until they're teenagers, you may as well forget about it. Proverbs 22 and verse 15. Remember, the fool will not learn. The fool despises wisdom and instruction. It says foolishness, Proverbs 22:15. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. So if you have a child that hates instruction, that hates wisdom, that hates knowledge, that doesn't want to learn, the Bible says drive the foolishness out of him with the rod. That's how it's done. Look at Proverbs 13 and verse 24. Proverbs 13 and verse 24. This is what you do if you love your kids. If you hate them, well, just do nothing and let them grow up and foster their natural tendencies and see how that works out for you. Proverbs 13 and verse 24. He that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes. The father that loves his son chastens his son, disciplines his son. Proverbs 19 and verse 18. Proverbs 19:18. Chasten thy son while there is hope, and let not thy soul spare for his crying. That tells us that there is a time when there is hope, and then there's a time in life when there's no longer hope. So you don't want to wait too long before the situation is hopeless. Education will not change people's nature. Only God can do that. Look at all of the so-called education we have today. Everybody's so highly educated. Most people have college degrees. Everybody goes to public schools. And has human nature changed one bit? Not one bit. Human nature is just as vile and wicked as it always was. The state always touts education being the answer. And it is the answer to make people into little obedient socialists. But it's not the answer to change their nature. Only God can do that. And education will not produce a paradise on earth. Only God will. Look at 2 Peter 3 and verse 13. And as a matter of fact, there's a couple places. Let me go to Romans chapter 1 just to show you here. Here's what happens whenever people get all wise and educated, especially when they get educated in an ungodly system which teaches evolution and teaches that there's no God. Here's what happens whenever we have a highly educated society. Romans chapter 1 and verse 20. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. You see, the very creation itself demands a creator. People that don't see it are they're doing it intentionally. Because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. You see? This is the state of America now. Professing ourselves to be wise. We are so highly educated, and we have become fools to worship the creature instead of the creator. It says, and change the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man, and to birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lusts of their own hearts, to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie, and worshipped and served the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. You ever hear of humanism? Worshipping the creature more than the Creator. You ever hear of evolution? Worshipping the creature more than the Creator. Why do you suppose we're in such bad shape? Then look what happens next. And is it any wonder? And just look around today and you'll see it. For this cause God gave them up unto vile affections. For even their women did change the natural use into that which is against nature. And likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust one toward another. Men with men, working that which is unseemly, and receiving themselves that recompense of their error, which was meet. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient. And then he lists off a whole bunch of horrible sins. But you see what happens? Man gets all wise in his own conceit, and then God turns him over. And they end up being fornicators, and they end up being sodomites. That's why we are in the situation we are in today. Because we were so wise, and we cast God out of the schools, and we thought we were so, that we knew better than God. And look what happened. Romans chapter 1 happened. I could take you to 1 Corinthians 1, but the sermon's going to get too long anyway. But God is not impressed with man's wisdom. Now, I'm not against education. Don't get me wrong, and I think you all know that. Half this sermon was about educating your children. Education is important. But remember, education and formal schooling are not the same thing, necessarily. Sometimes education happens in formal schooling, but a lot of times indoctrination and propaganda happens there, and real education does not. But only God will produce a paradise on earth, not education. Let's look at 2 Peter 3 and verse 13. 2 Peter 3 and verse 13. We are supposed to be, in verse 12, looking for and hasting unto the coming of the day of God, wherein the heavens being on fire shall be dissolved, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. Nevertheless, we, according to his promise, look for new heavens and a new earth, wherein dwelleth righteousness. You see, God is the one that brings paradise on earth, not the Department of Education. Okay, let's get into social development then of your children. You want to teach your kids how to talk and to interact with adults and with other children. It's funny, for all of the disparaging that homeschooling gets, where they are concerned that the children won't be socialized, have you ever talked to a present company accepted here? You ever talked to a teenager that is going to a public school and see a very antisocial person that doesn't want to talk to adults, or a lot of times doesn't want to talk to anybody? Because half the time they're probably so whacked out on mind-altering, you know, psycho drugs that they don't know how. But anyway, you see a lot of antisocial children out there. I don't know if you've noticed it. I've certainly noticed it. I see a lot of kids. You haven't noticed it? Oh, I've noticed it. Yeah, I see a lot of antisocial kids. I mean, for goodness sakes, go anywhere and see, what do kids do? They're on their phones constantly. Every time you go to a restaurant, you see kids together. And what are they? Four kids sitting at a table. What are they doing? Every one of them's on their phone. Antisocial. You want to teach your kids how to shake hands firmly when they greet someone. I know I'm just telling you basic stuff, but I'll tell you what. If you learn these next two things that I'm going to tell you, just these two simple things, I think these would take you further than a master's degree will in life. Learn how to shake hands firmly when you greet somebody. There's nothing I hate worse than a limp-wristed handshake. If it's from a woman, that's okay, because, you know, women are, they're supposed to be more gentle or whatever, you know, and I don't want a woman to rip my arm off or something when I shake her hands. But for a man, if I get these, you know, these little limp things, it just drives me crazy. I can't stand it. Call me whatever you want to call me. If I was a hiring manager and some dude walked in there and gave me one of these little things, I'd just say, you know what, we filled the position, you know, get out of here. I don't even want to talk to you. It's just pathetic. The next thing is, teach them to make eye contact with people when they talk. This is another thing that's important, and you see this with a lot of kids, and it is a skill that has to be learned. When they talk to you, they're always looking down, right? They can't look you in the eye. That's an important thing to teach your kids how to do, and it takes practice. But I would highly recommend doing that because that will take them far. Because if you're the hiring manager, once again, and some guy comes in, gives you a limp-wristed handshake, and then he looks at the table the whole time when he's talking to you, am I going to hire that guy? I'm not going to hire him. No way. I want to hire somebody that has social skills and technical skills. Teach your kids that talking face-to-face with face-to-face communication is preferable to writing, texting, or talking on the phone. And you know what the Bible teaches this? If you turn with me to 2 John 1 and verse 12, the Bible teaches that face-to-face communication is far better than even written communication. And written is far better than emails, and emails are far better than text, and texts are far better than Facebook or whatever. You can go down the line. But even written, a handwritten letter is a nice thing, and today it's something you hardly ever see. When I get a handwritten letter, I'm happy. I mean, that's a special thing to me. Like somebody really cares about me to sit down and write a handwritten letter. But even that pales in comparison to face-to-face communication. 2 John 1 and verse 12. John says here, he's writing to an elect lady there in verse 1. And he says, having many things to write unto you, I would not write with paper and ink, but I trust to come unto you and speak face to face, that our joy may be full. As good as it would have been to get a handwritten letter from an apostle of Jesus Christ, it would have been better to have that apostle show up and speak face to face. He says it there, that our joy may be full. Why do you have so many depressed teenagers today? It's because they're all on Facebook. They don't have real friends. They don't have real face-to-face interaction. Facebook, and this has been proven, Facebook is destroying social relationships. It is destroying people's ability to socialize and to talk and to deal with real people. It is antisocial. They ought to call it unsocial networking. That's what it really is. Look at 3 John 1. Yeah, there we go. Must be dyslexic. 3 John 1, 13 through 14. 3 John 1, 13 through 14. This idea of face-to-face communication was obviously important to the Apostle John because he said it in three of his epistles. 3 John 1, 13 through 14. I had many things to write, but I will not with ink and pen write unto thee. But I trust I shall shortly see thee, and we shall speak face to face. Peace be to thee. Our friends salute thee, greet the friends by name. Many things to say, and he could have just kept on writing, right? Nothing stopping him. But he intentionally stopped writing and was going to wait for a face-to-face interaction. Can you imagine if today the Bible was written and it was written in Twitter feeds or Facebook posts or memes or some silly foolishness like that? No. That's not God's method. And face-to-face even beats the written stuff. So, and this is an art. Making enough but not too much eye contact during a conversation is an art that has to be perfected. And I know I could certainly work on this. I could get better at this, and I'm sure a lot of people can. It takes practice. Because if you talk to somebody that never makes eye contact with you, it's awkward, right? It's just kind of weird, right? But have you ever talked to somebody that just stares you in the eyes and never, ever looks away? And every time you look away, he's looking at you again? It's just, you know, even an animal. You get an animal and just stare him in the eyes, he'll attack you, right? I mean, sometimes you about feel like just going ballistic when somebody just keeps staring you right in the face, right? It is an art. So, and people that are really good at it, they know how to do it. They'll look at you most of the time, but then when they're talking, they'll kind of look up, you know, or something, or they'll look down as they're speaking. And then it gives you a break to look away, and you don't have to feel like you're constantly staring somebody right in the eye all the time. And that's something that you need to teach your kids. But more than anything, it's just something they're going to have to learn by doing it, right? So that's why you got to get them off their phones and actually get them in front of a person to talk to somebody. Here's the next thing. So you got the firm handshake. You got looking them in the eye. And then thirdly, teach them to smile when they greet somebody. You walk into an interview, you could probably be a know-nothing simpleton. Walk into an interview with a good firm handshake, make eye contact and smile at the guy, and probably 9 times out of 10 you got the job, right? Unless you're just completely unqualified. So those three things are extremely important, I think, and I think you ought to teach your kids how to do that. Here's a good one. Teach your kids to introduce themselves to strangers, like in church or other places. Make them get out of their comfort zone. tell them that, hey, when you see somebody that you don't know, especially in a social setting, go up and introduce yourselves. And I see a lot of kids that don't do that. A lot of kids just keep to themselves. I see a lot of adults that keep to themselves, for that matter, don't introduce themselves. So this is an important social function that your kids should learn. You want to teach kids to listen and pay attention when another person is speaking, and to not only care about themselves and what they have to say. And of course, this is good information for all of us. If you look in Philippians 2, 3 through 4, as Christians especially, we are supposed to be more concerned with others than ourselves. But the truth is, and this is true, you know, during a conversation, you know what's happening most of the time when the other guy is talking? It's not considering what he's saying, it's not learning from him, it's not just taking it in, right? What is it? It's thinking of what you're going to say next, right? Am I right? I mean, I'm right, right? This is generally what we do in conversations, especially if it's some kind of a debate thing. In a debate, are you really listening to what the other guy has to say? No. You're latching onto whatever he said, which you think you can refute, and then you're not thinking about anything else that he's saying because you want to get back and you want to say the next thing. And that is human nature. But you want to teach your kids that, especially just in, maybe not in a debate format, but in a normal conversation, to be an active listener, to listen, to be genuinely interested in what the other person has to say. And that's when you get quality conversation, and that's when you can build quality relationships, when you really care about what the other person has to say, and you ask more questions than you give answers. Right? Okay, so Philippians 2, 3 through 4. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem other better than themselves. Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. And then he goes on to say that this was the mind that was in Christ Jesus, that Christ Jesus put others first before himself. So we ought to esteem others better than ourselves. This involves, this type of active listening involves eye contact and what is called active listening, where when somebody is speaking to you, you listen to what they're saying, and then you repeat back to them what they have said, or you summarize what they have said. So if I understand right, you're saying this, and that not only makes you to understand better what they're saying, but it makes them feel like and know that you actually care about what they're talking about. And somebody that is a good conversationalist is good at that. I would say teach your kids, especially when they get to be teenagers, because a lot of times teenagers just don't like to talk to adults anymore for some reason, but teach them how to have a conversation and not to give one-word answers. You ever talk to somebody where you get nothing but one-word answers? How you doing? Good. What have you been up to? Nothing. You know, it's pretty hard to have a conversation with somebody with one-word answers. How'd work go? Great. You know, it's like pulling teeth trying to talk to some people, you know? Here's one. I learned this, and I don't think this was original to the guy that I learned it from, but I had a friend back in the Army, and he was an atheist, and I've told you about him before, and I learned a lot from him, and he said that he learned from his grandfather that if you want to be interesting, you have to be interested. And what's going on with that thing? But anyway, so if you want to be an interesting person, then you must be interested in other people. Because most people are not going to spend a whole lot of time talking to somebody who's not interested in them at all, and they just want to talk about themselves, right? When you talk to somebody and the conversation always ends up being brought back around to the other person, then eventually you're just thinking, I want to talk to somebody else, right? But if you have the person that's truly interested in you, that's going to make you interested in him. So that's a good one to remember, and that's something that's funny. You can learn things in strange places, and that was many, many years ago that I learned that, probably 12, 13 years ago, and from an unlikely source, and I've never forgotten it. You want to teach your kids that the younger they are, the less advice they should offer, because wisdom generally comes with age and with reading the Word of God. So I guess if you're a young person and you've read the Word of God a lot, you probably have better wisdom to offer than a lot of older people that are illiterate and ignorant of the Word of God. But in general, kids probably should listen more and speak less, right? Because they don't know as much. And especially when they're talking with adults. And, you know, have you ever gotten advice from a younger person that clearly just didn't know what they were talking about at all, but this is just going on like they really are some wise one. It's pretty annoying. So you want to teach your kids about that. Teach your kids that they have two ears and one mouth and that they ought to use them proportionally. Let's look at James 1 and verse 19. James 1 and verse 19. I think God was trying to tell us something when he gave us two ears and one mouth. That does not apply to preaching sermons, by the way. But other than that, James 1 and verse 19 says, "Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath." Now, that's the opposite of what we are by nature, right? All of us, or a lot of us, are quick to speak. Right, I'm guilty of that too. You know, you hear something, and you know the proverbs say that he that answereth a matter before he heareth it, it's folly and shame unto him. But how many of us have been guilty of that? We hear something without even getting all the facts, and we bloviate our opinion out there to everybody. Right? We've all done that. Well, that's not what we should do. We should be swift to hear, be quick to listen, and slow to speak. You're never going to get in trouble when you are quick to listen. Right? But you will get in trouble when you're quick to speak if you haven't thought it out properly before you opened your mouth. As one of my favorite quotes goes, better to remain silent and have men think you a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. One of my favorite quotes, I love that. I want to teach your kids how to tactfully express a disagreement. Right? Because there is a time to disagree, and it's not a good idea to teach your kids to never have a disagreement with somebody, to never have an argument with somebody. But there is a way to argue, there's a way to disagree. And especially when they're dealing with an older person where they should be respectful, it's a delicate issue to teach them how to disagree in a tactful, respectful manner. Let's look at Proverbs 12 and verse 16. Proverbs 12 and verse 16. Kids have a lot of good qualities, but tact is usually not one of them, the younger they are. Kids, I think, kind of my own saying, but kids say what the rest of us think, right? We all think things. We meet somebody, we see somebody that's dressed ridiculously or acting ridiculously or whatever, and we think it, but we have a filter where we're not going to just blurt it out. But kids, there's no filter. They just say whatever they think. They're brutally honest. And that brutal honesty is okay, but there is a social way to express your opinions without flaring up people's anger unnecessarily. Proverbs 12 and verse 16, it says, "A fool's wrath is presently known, but a prudent man covereth shame." So if you do get angry about something, and you teach your kids this, if they do get angry, don't let your wrath be presently known. Just take 10 seconds. Take some deep breaths. Think about it. Consider what you're going to say, especially if you're going to put it in writing. If you're going to put it in writing, you know what? Write it out and sit on it for a day. Don't blast off an email when you're mad. I was so close to doing that one time. It would have been the most foolish thing I've ever done. Can't ever take it back. Look at Proverbs 29 and verse 11. Proverbs 29 and verse 11. "A fool uttereth all his mind, but a wise man keepeth it in till afterwards." You don't have to tell everybody everything you're thinking. Nor should you, for that matter. You want to teach your kids that there's a time to keep silence and there's a time to speak. Look at Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 7. Now this requires a lot of discretion, discernment, wisdom. It's hard to know when to speak and when to keep quiet. And sometimes, a lot of times it's wrong to speak, but a lot of times it's wrong to keep quiet. Sometimes the right thing to say is to speak up, and it's hard to know when to do that. Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 7 says, "A time to rend, and a time to sow, a time to keep silence, and a time to speak." Now, how are you going to teach your kids the time to keep silence and the time to speak, how to control their anger and express disagreements tactfully? by your own example, right? You got to let, you got to show them that that's how it's done. Telling them isn't going to be all that expedient. Now, the next thing when it comes to social training is to teach them to be respectful of authority. Authorities could be parents, pastors, police, judges, owners of private property. That's an authority. You realize that anybody that owns any piece of property is in authority over you, right? The people that own this hotel are in authority over us, right? If you walk into somebody's house, they are the authority. It doesn't matter what their age is, doesn't matter what their social status is, they are the authority. If it's their car, they're the authority. And you do whatever they say when you're in their house or in their car. And if you don't like that, well, then don't go in their house or their car. But teaching your kids to respect private property is extremely important. And adults in general. Adults in general are authority figures over children. Now, I don't recommend if it's an adult that your kid doesn't know and has never seen before, you just don't obey any stranger pulling up in a car, obviously. But if it's an adult that they know, right, and that you know, then they ought to. Or if it's an adult that's just in public telling them, hey, be quiet, stop running, stop yelling, you ought to teach them to obey that adult because that adult is an authority figure. Now, of course, you also want to teach them that all authority is limited. They should never submit to ungodly, immoral, or unethical orders. Look at Acts 5 and verse 29. Acts 5 and verse 29. Because if there's one thing I can't stand, it's bratty kids out in public, and then an adult who has some sanity tells them to, you know, pipe down or quit running or something, and they just pay no mind to them at all because their parents never taught them to respect adults. Acts 5 and verse 29. It says, then Peter and the other apostles answered and said, we ought to obey God rather than men. So you never have to, nor should you, submit to an unethical, ungodly order, no matter what sphere of life, no matter who it is from or whom it is from. You should never obey man whenever he tells you to disobey God. I think you ought to teach your kids manners. And this is something that I realize, I'm not trying to insult your intelligence, but I just see a lack of manners in a lot of kids out there. And I just see a lack of manners in society in general. We are devolving into a really heathenistic society, just a barbaric society where people just don't have common manners anymore. I would teach your kids, and whenever I have kids, I intend to teach them to address adults as Mr. and Mrs. I think that's important. I'm not saying you have to. This is just my opinion. But I have been exposed to this before in different places, and I think it's a good thing. And the thing is, too, I was talking to my wife about this. She's from the Philippines. And in the Philippines, it is traditional to use what they call honorifics with adults. So whenever you speak to an adult, and you probably know about this too, Lucy, when you speak to an adult in the Philippines, you always use it would be the equivalent of Mr. and Mrs. or something like ate. I think it's ate and some of the other words, and I don't know what that exactly means, but it's an honorific anyway. So there, and it would be a disgraceful thing in the Philippines to just walk up to an adult, for a child to walk up to an adult and just say, hey, Chad, or whatever. Like, you don't do that in the Philippines. And you didn't do that in this country years back either. I was used to, back in the church that I was in, a lot of the kids, almost all of them, I was either Mr. Wagner or Mr. Chad to all of them. And that was foreign to me at that time. I was not exposed to something like that. And it was a little bit strange, but I came to see the wisdom in that. And I was talking to my wife this morning, and she was telling me, and she didn't even know I was going to be talking about this morning, but she was saying that not only is it good for the kids to call adults Mr. and Mrs. because it establishes a respect there, it's also good for the adults. Because if you as an adult, if a little kid comes up to me and says, Mr. Wagner, da-da-da, then I'm going to feel like, wow, he respects me. He's looking up to me as a man in some kind of an authority figure. And I'm going to be on my better behavior, and I'm going to be a better example to that child than if he came in, if a little kid comes up and says, hey, Chad, or whatever, then there's a difference. So whenever kids call adults by Mr. and Mrs., it makes that adult a better responsible person, I do believe, anyway. So, like I said, this is my opinion. If you don't like it, then you don't have to take it. Of course, you want to teach them how to say please, thank you, no thank you, you're welcome. This is just common basic stuff that that everybody used to do, and a lot of parents still do, but I'm not telling you all these things because none of you, it's not like you're not doing them. I'm not telling you that. I'm telling you these things just to cover all bases and be broad. You want to teach kids to listen and obey adults that they or their parents know, and I kind of mentioned this just a minute ago. You should teach your children to obey an adult that you or your children know when he or she tells them to quiet down or stop running in a building or something like that. You want to teach them to be respectful to adults, and if an adult tells them to settle down in a public area, then you should teach them to obey him, right? You should not, I would not teach my kids, you only obey me and you don't have to obey anybody else. I'd say pretty much anybody that's an adult, you obey them unless they're telling you to do something that clearly I've told you to do, not to do, or to do, or something, unless they're contradicting me. You never want to allow your kids to backtalk an adult. I would certainly not ever tolerate that. And you want to teach your kids to obey the adult, whoever he is, and then if they think he was out of line, then come talk to you about it. And if what he told them to do was something that you don't think he had the right to tell them to do, or he shouldn't have told them to do, then you can tell them, you know what, just don't worry about what he said. You just do this, and you don't worry about that. And then you can go talk to that adult and say, hey, you know what, I think you overstepped your bounds there. I don't think that's an issue, and I've told my children, you know, that they can disregard what you said. But you don't teach your kids to disregard what an adult says. You take care of that after the fact. You want to teach your kids not to interrupt when someone else is talking. I mean, this is an important social thing. With some people and in some cultures, it's a lot more acceptable to interrupt than in others. And sometimes when you're talking with an interrupter, you just have to learn to be an interrupter if you want to have a conversation at all, because you know they're never going to stop talking. And I'm not an interrupter, so I have a hard time talking with people that are interrupters themselves, or that just will not stop talking until somebody interrupts them. Because some people I've literally met somebody. I mean, they will talk and they will not stop talking until you interrupt them. And whereas I kind of try to limit my conversation to about 30 seconds. I speak a little bit, and then I naturally pause and wait for them to respond or something. But anyway, you want to teach your kids not to interrupt. They need to learn. Children need to learn that they are not the most important beings in the universe, right? I think a lot of parents think, and a lot of kids think, that they are paramount. And if a parent is talking to an adult and their kid comes up and interrupts them, they take their attention away from the adult and say, what do you need? I wouldn't do that. You're teaching your kid that they are the most important thing, and that they can just interrupt any conversation and they take precedence over anything. And they don't. They shouldn't. You want to teach them for the real world, right? In the real world, if your boss is talking to somebody, you just walk up to your boss and just interrupt and just take over the conversation? Of course not. You don't do that. Or you won't do it for long anyway. Teach your kids not to interrupt adults when they're talking. Here's what I recommend doing. And I did not come up with this myself. There's a friends of mine that, and I don't know where, if they came up with it on their own or they read it somewhere. And I've shared this with you before, but I'll share it with you again. When your kids want something, so if you're talking to somebody and your kids want to get your attention, here's what you do. You teach them that they walk up to you and they put their hand on your arm, okay? So you're talking to another adult, that your child needs something. Instead of saying, daddy, 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 until you finally say, what? You teach them, put your hand on my arm. Then you feel the hand. You don't even have to look away from the conversation. Just put your hand on their hand. They know then, I have heard you, I know you're here, and I will get to you as soon as I can. Then, whenever you have an opportunity in the conversation, then you say, excuse me for a second, what do you need? Then your kids know that you care about them, that you love them, but that they are not the most important thing in the universe. They do not just get to interrupt you anytime they feel like it. And then, guess what? You can actually enjoy a conversation with an adult. You don't have to spend 18 years of your life being constantly ripped to and fro from every conversation you want to have. I think it's a genius idea. And like I said, I didn't come up with it myself, but I know the people that do it, and it works. It's just a matter of, it's like anything else, you just got to do it. If you want to do it, you got to set your mind to it, you got to stick to it, and you know, just be firm on it, and eventually it'll become second nature to your kids. Eating, social etiquette with eating. I would teach kids to sit quietly while eating and speak in turn, Proverbs 17 and verse 1. Proverbs 17 and verse 1. Better is a dry morsel and quietness therewith than an house full of sacrifices with strife. So if you had to have a choice between living at subsistence and eating a dry morsel at home, but having quietness around the table, or having a great big feast in madness and chaos, well, Solomon says it's better to have a dry morsel. But there's no reason you can't have both. You can have the feast and have a nice, peaceful dinner time as well. I would teach your kids to ask to be excused from the dinner table before leaving. I would teach them to eat whatever's set before them without complaining. I would teach them to decline food politely, especially if they're in an environment outside the home and they're at somebody else's house and they're offered some food. Teach them to say, no thank you, or whatever, you know, not, you know, whatever, some other thing that would not be very polite. Teach them to thank the cook for the food. I always love it at the Corum's house. The kids always thank their mother and father for the food that they provided them. I think that's great. Teach them to be honest but tactful when asked what they thought of a meal. And this kind of goes back to that, you know, learning how to communicate with people, because you can be honest and not hurt somebody's feelings at the same time. You know, if somebody says, how did you like the meal? You could say, it wasn't my favorite, you know, or, you know, it's just not really my type of food, but I think you prepared it very well. Or, I mean, there's all kinds of ways that you can say that without, I mean, you could just be brutally honest and just say, it was terrible, it was the worst thing I ever tasted. But that, is that nice? I mean, you know, you wouldn't want to do that to somebody. You wouldn't want somebody to do that to you. So, you know, you want to, once again, kids don't have the filter naturally, right? So when a kid eats something that's horrible and you ask him, what'd you think of it? What's he going to tell you? It was terrible. I hate it. You know, well, probably not the best thing to do whenever you're, especially when they're outside the home. So teach them how to respectfully and tactfully express their dislike of food or anything else. Here's one, and I realize, I mean, I'm just kind of covering it all, but teach your kids not to burp and fart in front of other people outside of the home, right? So in the home, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, of course, I'm guilty of that myself. But you know what? How many of you have ever heard me burp or fart before? Probably not very many of you, right? Believe me, I can do it with the best of them. But I have manners, and I don't do that around people unless I am extremely close to them, like best friend or my brother or something like that. I just, even when I'm around people that I'm close with, I'm just not cutting loose in front of people. It's rude. You know, I recommend not doing that. And I probably shouldn't have to tell you that, but I have seen people that kind of haven't figured that one out yet, even to adulthood, so figured I should mention it. And behaving in public. You want to teach your kids to not yell or scream in public. Teach them to not run in public or inside buildings. Like, it just drives me crazy. You see kids inside running. It's like, what do you think? You're on a playground? You're in Walmart, you're running, you're at the restaurant, you're running. It's crazy. Yelling and screaming, it's madness. Not wandering around a store or a restaurant. I see this all the time. Every time I'm in a restaurant, there's some little toddler just wandering all around wherever he feels like, running around the store. And it's just, I mean, I look at these parents and I'm thinking, are you blind, deaf, stupid? What, you don't see this? You don't notice that your child is just all over the place? I mean, is this like his little private playroom or something where he can just run around in public? It's crazy. Teach them to not grab things off the shelf at the store. I see this all the time. Kids, I want this, I want that, and they're grabbing this and that. And don't teach your kids not to touch stuff that doesn't belong to them. Whether at the store or at somebody's house, they should not be touching stuff that's not theirs. Not to beg for things at the store. Ugh, kids throwing tantrums, begging for this and that. I'm telling you what, even if I planned on buying my kid a treat when I went to the grocery store, if he's begging, he is not going to get it. period. And like I said, not to touch other people's possessions, like their car, their furniture, their home decorations or something. When you take your kids to somebody else's house, or they're in somebody else's car or whatever, they shouldn't be touching stuff. Or when you got a car and your kids are just walk up to somebody's car and just start rubbing the dirt in the paint or something, I mean, that's, you can ruin the paint on somebody's car. Now, my car, I personally don't care. It's an old piece of junk, but just the principle, I even my own car, I wouldn't allow my kids to do that, or somebody else's car that's an old junker, because then they're not going to learn the difference between a junker and a decent car. Anyway, teach them to keep their fingers to themselves. They shouldn't be touching other people's stuff. You want to teach them to share and not be selfish. Now, I will qualify this, though. I mean, sharing is good, but you shouldn't teach your kids. It goes one. You should teach your kids that they ought to be kind and share with others, but that they don't have a right to have others share with them. You know, you don't have a right to other people's property, and you don't want to teach your kids that. But I teach them to take turns, teach them not to be bossy with other children, or especially with adults. And I've seen this too. Kids that are bossy with other kids, or even bossy with adults, they're playing with adults and they're bossing the adult around and telling him what to do whenever they're playing with him or something. That's not a good thing for your kid to learn. Teach them to be kind and encourage them to share with others, but you want to teach them that they do not have a right to another child's property. They do not, if their brother or sister has a toy, they do not have a right to demand that they get to play with that toy if it belongs to their brother or sister. So teach them to share, but you teach them that they don't demand and they don't have a right to have somebody else share with them. And sometimes there are just going to be selfish people out there that are not going to share with them, and they need to learn to deal with that. Teach them cleaning up after themselves, making their bed. I think that's a good thing to do, good way to prepare them for the real world so they're not living like pigs. Teach them to clean their room. This is somebody who mentioned this to me. Have your kids learn to give or throw away things that they don't use or they don't need on a regular basis. This will help them to not be so materialistic and learn to be hoarders. It'll also teach them to be neat and organized. Washing their clothes. I'd say there's no reason for a mother to be doing the laundry of teenagers. Teenagers can do and should do their own laundry. There you go. See, some people are happy about this. I don't. I kind of had a special circumstance, but I was doing laundry from 12 years old, pretty much out of necessity. But anyway, still, I don't think that a mother should have to be doing all that stuff. There's a lot of kids get to college, do not know how to do laundry. I'm sure we've all seen this before. Never used an iron, never washed clothes, never cooked anything. They don't know how to do anything. Completely ill-prepared. You know, 13 years in a government school and they don't even know how to wash clothes. Girls should be taught to do laundry at a young age so that they're prepared for marriage. I realize, male chauvinist, I get it. But anyway, doing the dishes directly after dinner. This is something that I was not taught as a kid. And it was just, from the time I was 12, it was just my dad, my brother, and I. And it wasn't enforced. It was my brother and I's job to do the dishes. But there should have been some guidance and leadership. And it should have been either you do the, one of you is assigned each day of the week, or one of you is assigned a whole week or something. And the deal is you do the dishes as soon as dinner's over and they're all done, dried, and put away. And it wasn't like that. So me being Johnny on the spot like I am, I would do mine right away, and then my brother would let them pile up for a week or something, and it was just a mess. And so anyway, that's a good thing to do. Teach them not to procrastinate and let the dishes sit in the sink after the meal, because this is, if you learn to do that when you're a kid, you're going to go on into adulthood and your house is going to be a mess and it's just unsanitary and it's just not good. I'd say assign children tasks that are done after each meal, like cleaning and wiping down the table or sweeping the floor or washing the dishes. The Quorums are great at this. You guys all, you have your own, your job, whatever it is, and I think you maybe rotate or alternate every once in a while, but you guys are great at that. And dinner's over and the table's clean, the floor is swept, the dishes are done, and Andrea doesn't have to do any of it. And that's good. She's got enough to do. She doesn't need to do everything else. So I think that's a great example. See, as soon as Jason leaves, I'm singing his praises, see? So you have to tell him. I think there's no reason that a mother of children should be doing all the cleanup after meals. What do you think you have kids for if it's not to help you out around the house, right? And, of course, other reasons. But. okay, I realize this is probably unnecessary, but teach them to wipe off the rim of the toilet after they use it if they're boys. You know, that's, I think a lot of people, a lot of boys don't know how to do that. You go into the bathroom and there's pee all over the place, and teach them to clean up after themselves. That's something you should do. Teach them to put the seat down as a courtesy to girls and women. That's another nice thing to do. I don't know where that tradition came from, and I can't say that I'm like a huge proponent of it, but it is socially acceptable. That's what you're supposed to do. I'm not sure why. Maybe it's because the guys are supposed to be the ones that are doing the labor, so we should have to lift up the seat and the girls can't put it down. I don't understand all of the where's and wherefores and whys and all that, but anyway. And teach them to volunteer. Teach your kids to volunteer to help family, friends, brethren, strangers that are in need. Now, this is another good socialization aspect, because, look, if society was organized where you only do what your job is, and you only do what you absolutely have to do or what somebody pays you to do, it'd be a pretty miserable world, wouldn't it? I mean, can you imagine every time that you need help from a friend and you call him up and he says, okay, well, my rate's 25 an hour and I charge 50 cents a mile, but yeah, whatever you need, I'll be right there. I mean, you know, that you want to teach your kids to volunteer and to help out, right? Because that's what makes life worth living. Somebody needs in out there. So yeah, teach them to volunteer. You want to teach them to love and help out the brethren. Jason, as soon as you leave, I was singing your praises up here, so you'll have to hear about it later. Anyway, 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 15. As soon as you leave, maybe as soon as you left, that might be a little more grammatically correct. 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 15. It says, I beseech you, brethren, ye know the house of Stephanas, that it is the first fruits of Achaia, and that they have addicted themselves to the ministry of the saints. That's a good addiction right there. Whenever you are addicted, you just can't get enough of helping out the brethren. So that's something to teach your kids, to volunteer to help out, you know, not just brethren, friends, family, you know, neighbors or whatever. Teach them to be quick to volunteer to help a friend who's moving or working on a project at home or, you know, doing something where he needs a hand. Like I said, that's what makes life enjoyable, right? Whenever you got people there that would help you out. And you also want to teach them that they should want to be the friend that their friends always know that they can count on. You know, I think probably a lot of us have at least a couple people in our lives that we know that, you know what, if I needed something, anything, I know that I could call up so-and-so and he would be there no matter what, right? So you want to teach your kids to be a friend like that. Right? It says that a friend loveth at all times, and there is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother in Proverbs. Okay, now, finally, we're down to the end. This is whenever you want to, there comes a point when you need to kick them out, right? When you need to give them the boot. And some of them are going to be easier, or some of them you won't even have to give them a boot. They're going to want to get out right away. But once you've trained your kids and prepared them for the real world, then it's time to put them into the real world. Give them the boot, especially boys. I'll get into girls later, but in my opinion anyway, boys need to get the boot. Some young men who are motivated and responsible, they're going to need no prodding at all. They're going to be eager to get out as soon as they can. And that's great. I think you've done a good job. If your kids are ready, if your boys are ready to get out there on their own as soon as they can, you've done a good job, because you've done what I've been talking about for 13 weeks, prepared them for the real world. Now, some are going to need some encouragement, right? Some of them are going to maybe need a little bit of, you know, a little pep talk to get out. And then there's going to be a few that are going to stick around and mooch off you as long as you let them, right? And you're going to have that. And those are the ones that you need to, you know, put the boot, you know where, and get them out. Millennials today, the most worthless generation until the next one comes along. My generation, I am so sad to say, although I'm almost a Generation Xer, which was the second worst generation known to mankind, you know, and they were only a little bit worse than the ones that went before them, the baby boomers. But anyway, let's look here. Millennials today are living with their parents into their 20s and 30s at record rates. This is partly due to a poor job market. That is part of it, but I don't think that's the whole reason either. It's also partly due to the poor character, which results from the poor work ethic and poor money management. So they weren't taught anything. They weren't taught good character. They probably haven't opened up a Bible before. They've never heard a sermon on what it is to be a man and what it is to get out there and provide for yourself. And they don't have a good work ethic. And they've gone to to a public indoctrination facility for 13 years that basically didn't prepare them for the real world at all. So what do you expect? I got a quote here for you. This is from an article on Zero Hedge. I read this. This section I didn't even have in the original outline. And then when I read this article, it got me thinking. I thought, oh well, that's kind of a good way to conclude this study. And so anyway, this article is called "Here's How Much Retirees Are Spending to Support Their Adult Kids." This was on December 9th, 2017, last year. It says at one point in time in America, living at home with mom and dad after crossing out of your teenage years and into your 20s was embarrassing and something that was generally avoided at all costs. And while hard times come and go, 20-somethings who were forced back into their parents' care worked their tails off until they could save up enough money to once again regain their freedom. But these days, millennials seem to be embracing the free room and board provided by their parents. According to a new study from the Census Bureau, roughly one-third of all millennials live at home with their parents, and one-fourth of them can't be bothered with enrolling in school or finding a job. You see that? One-third of all millennials live at home with their parents. That's crazy. That is crazy. And a fourth of them live at home and do nothing and totally mooch off their parents, don't even have a job. The article continues. Parents could miss out on almost $250,000 in retirement savings by paying their adult kids' expenses. According to NerdWallet analysis, a parent's retirement savings could be $227,000 higher if they chose to save the money that would otherwise go to their child's living expenses and tuition. Parents paying college costs could be missing out on almost $80,000 in retirement savings. More than a quarter of parents of children 18 and older, 28%, are paying or have paid their adult children's tuition or student loans. The average parent takes out $21,000 in loans for their child's college education, but the hit to retirement savings is almost quadruple that amount. Most adult children are living with their parents for more than a year after they turn 18. Almost 3 in 5 parents with kids 18 and older, 59%, have had adult children living with them for more than a year. Over 1 in 5, 23%, have had adult children living with them for more than 5 years. On average, these parents say the longest period of time they have had their adult children living with them is 4.5 years. Parents expect their kids to help them financially during retirement. Almost a quarter of parents saving for retirement, 23%, expect their children to provide financial support for them after they retire. Millennial parents are most likely to say this, 44% versus 25% of Generation X parents and 5% of Baby Boomer parents, despite saving more than parents from other generations. So, you see that it's not only bad for the kids to let them live with you for years on end, but it's bad for parents because the parents, it costs money to have your kids living with you, especially if you're paying for their college. And it's one thing if you're paying for their college degree to get a degree that will benefit them and that they can, make a lot of money when they get out. But if they're, going for humanities or gender studies or one of these other worthless degrees, wow, save for your retirement and don't expect to strap your kids with it for the rest of their lives. This is what happens in the Philippines, I gotta say. In the Philippines, parents expect, and we got enough problems here in America, but they got some problems over there too. In the Philippines, parents expect their kids to take care of them, basically. And what happens is the kids, whenever they're in their 20s and should be out there working and saving up money and buying their own house, no, they're living with their parents, taking care of their parents, who are not old, who are in their 40s, 50s, maybe 60s or something. And the kids can, it's no wonder they're a poor country. The kids can, they'll never get a good start in life because they're paying for their parents their whole lives. It's crazy. Instead of here, at least traditionally, parents provided for your kids until you're 18 and said, all right, get out. Go make your own way in the world, and I'll take care of myself, and you take care of yourself. And if I get really old, like in my 80s or 90s, and I can't work anymore, that's a different story. But the idea of just having kids so that you can retire at 40 years old or something is madness. So anyway, who knows? Maybe we're heading that direction. But it's crazy. It's a travesty. I feel bad for them over there because the kids can never get ahead. And then you got kids, and I know of people that the poor kids are working to put their other siblings through school or something like that. And it's like, you're never going to get ahead. You're going to spend the rest of your life taking care of your older family. You should be taking care of themselves. And that's a perpetuating cycle. Anyway. So if you've trained your boys well, they should be working through their teenage years, and they should have money saved to move out, I'd say, within a maximum of a couple years after graduating high school. I would encourage them to get out on their own and be completely financially independent at the earliest age possible. I would allow my boys to live at home, and who knows, it's going to be 20 years until this ever happens for me, so maybe I will change my mind when I get there. I don't know, but this is what I think I would do at that point based on other, you know, situations and other families that I have observed. I would allow my boys to live at home for 2 years after graduating high school if they were working hard and saving money, and for 4 years during the time they were attending college, as long as they were going for a degree in something that I approved of and would be economically beneficial to them. Like, what are you going to dictate where your kids go to college and what they go for? Well, if you're staying at my house, yeah. You don't want to do what I say, then go on your own and do whatever you want to do. But if you're staying here, then I have a say in it, I would say. But anyway, as for my Christian daughters that were biblically minded and wanted to marry and be homemakers, then I would allow them to live with me until they found a Christian man to marry to be their head and provider. And I would certainly hope that that would happen sooner than later. I wouldn't want to see the poor things living with me forever or something like that. But that's what I would say. I would make a distinction there between girls and boys for obvious reasons. I would say encouraging or forcing them to move out and to live on their own would only make it more difficult for them to submit to their future husbands and to embrace the God-ordained role of homemaker. So I just think it would be counterproductive for me to tell my girls, all right, get out, go out there, make your own way, and take care of yourself, because it's going to be harder for them then to submit themselves to a husband whenever that happens. While they were living at home, I would expect them to work, preferably from home or their own home business or something, and save up money and get themselves in a good financial position when they marry. That way, in the time that they spend when they were living at home, I would expect them to be working to provide for themselves or something, I guess, and to be saving money. I'd tell them flat out, you're going to live here, you're going to save money, because whenever you get married, I don't want your husband to adopt a bunch of bills. I want you to walk up and say, hey, I got $30,000 to help us buy a house or whatever, you know, and be ready to help out. So anyway, that's what I personally would do, but what you do is, of course, up to you. I'm not telling you what to do. So that concludes the study on preparing your kids for the real world, and more than likely I'm not going to be talking about this subject for a long time, and I'm sure that will be to the great satisfaction of some of you anyway. So thank you for your kind and patient attention.